It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Come every on. Team gon' get the power, it's the power. Power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. Power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Come every on. Team gon' get the power, it's the power. Power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. Power.
LSU with We have a player quit the team. Is it the end of the world? We'll talk about Mac Markway. Let's go, though. We are back after I took a Sunday off, and the doctor's trying to figure out what's going on with me, but I appreciate all of your prayers and all that stuff. We'll talk about that coming up later, but we do have a first-time guest. You're going to love him, coming up in about 20 or so minutes, and he's going to give you a very interesting report. Garrett Nussmeier has had some turnover issues. Is it something that you should be worried about? So what's very interesting is we need, as a society, to call things what it is. And Mac Markway gave LSU a very good, reliable amount of snaps last year. And anybody that plays for LSU, especially the ones that do the right things, I'm always going to root for him. And I wish Mac Markway nothing but the best in his next stop. But he flat out quit the team today. And it's selfish. It's all there is to it. It's a selfish move that he made. And I was pretty shocked by it because he was going to play. He was going to have some type of role with LSU football. Now, would it have been the same role that he wanted? Probably not. It is also important to point out the two coaches he was closest to on staff left. Obviously, Robert Steeples, who's from his area, coached at his high school. And of course, the tight ends coach himself went to Notre Dame. So his actual position coaches left. So that was working against him. Another one of his good friends also reportedly quit the team, and Preston Hickey, who also won't be playing probably next year for LSU at defensive tackle. He wasn't at practice today. So look, a lot of things changed for him in the last couple of weeks, but he quit, and he puts LSU in a semi-difficult spot. So, yeah, we could say best of luck, very happy that you played, but weeks before the season, you leave your teammates high and dry when you can't transfer anywhere. And what I think he's doing is he is preserving himself. He is preventing him burning a redshirt year, because last year, he didn't necessarily play a lot, but he played in more than four games. So doing this now preserves his three more years of eligibility as he looks for somewhere else. But this can also be a good thing. It really can be, because ultimately, college football players want to play. It is the single most important thing to them. Now, you, whoever you are watching this right now, I agree that it should be about the team. It should be about the bigger grouping. It should be about coming together and winning a national championship. But I know of LSU football players who had, like Mac Markway, decent chances of playing, but still leaving the team for better opportunities to play. It's not that they hate LSU or they hate you. They are doing what's best for them, and it's important to understand that, okay? Mac Markway did that today. It's not that he hates LSU. It's he's looking out what's best for him. He wants to go somewhere and play. But why would you do this? If your goal is to play, why would you leave so close to the start of the season? Well, it's one of these things, the good old-fashioned pun. Your grandpa probably told you this. Your grandmother probably told you this phrase. The writing was on the wall. Kamarion Pimpton is here, folks. And I understand Tre'Davious Green is the new shiny toy at LSU football. And he is the real deal. And he has a very good shot of being the best tight end ever at LSU. But the issue with Tre'Davious Green going into year one is he doesn't have a year of practice of doing something called blocking, all right? Blocking is really hard to do as a tight end, especially if you were mostly a wide receiver, which is what Tre'Davious Green was. Now, Kamarion Plimpton last year was not a good blocker. He was a huge liability, and it hurt his playing time when LSU decided to go heavy 13 and 14 personnel. But I've gotten from two sources, one media member and someone in the building, that has told me that Kamarion Plimpton's blocking has gotten better. And look, when I graded these prospects, and if you're a patron, you know this, I take my high school prospect grading very seriously. Kamarion Plimpton had a full point higher on my grading scale than Mac Markway, even though the recruiting rankings really weren't that far off from each other. So Mac Markway saw that Kamarion Plimpton jumped him. And that, folks, right there is a reason why this is a potentially a good thing. Mac Markway is telling you, hey, there are two guys that are here that are way better than me, and both of these guys aren't the actual starter in Mason Taylor, who is going to be LSU's number one tight end. So Mac Markway quitting is essentially telling you that Kamarion Plimpton is here, all right? He gives this offense some upside that not many offensive players at LSU can potentially give you in the past. We are talking about one of the longest wingspans we have ever seen in the history of college football. And are there some concerns with physicality with Kamarion Plimpton's game? Sure. I still don't think he's going to be a finished product until year three, but if his physicality gets better in the blocking game and his route running, his limbs alone just increases the catch radius of this offense. And Kamarion Plimpton had a good spring game. Kamarion Plimpton has had good practices. Kamarion Plimpton's blocking has gotten better. And what you can see this LSU offense potentially do is do what they did, or what we saw Georgia do to us a few years ago in the SEC championship game, which is outgap you in 12 personnel settings, where Kamarion Plimpton could be in a three-point stance along with Mason Taylor, and boom, at the snap, they're out wide. Or pre-snap, they're out wide. We can stretch them. So the truth here is Mac Markway is sending a message. He wants to play. He doesn't hate LSU. He quit the team because he knew that he would probably play more than four games as a fourth-string tight end, which is a position that Brian Kelly has developed better than almost any other coach in the country, maybe outside of Iowa. This is a good thing if you are a Kamarion Plimpton fan. And I've told you guys, hold on to your Kamarion Plimpton stocks. Yes, the true freshman season wasn't as productive, but this guy is a freak of nature, and I can't wait to see what happens to him next. Now, he's still got to hold off Tre'Davious Green, but I don't think they're necessarily going to be playing the same type of position or the same type of role. And, of course, we know Mason Taylor is the big boy in office at tight end. So really pumped up. I wish Mac Markway stayed on the team. I hope he changes his mind because you can't go anywhere else. But he wanted to do something for himself. All the power to you, okay? So we say hi to BT. We say hi to Jared. We say hi to Go Tigers. And look, I understand when you publicly say that a player quits, that it's a negative connotation. Quitting isn't always a negative connotation. Quitting is sometimes a good thing, right? You quit a job that you don't like anymore, that's a good thing. If you aren't happy and if you aren't, like Will Campbell said, all a part of the LSU Tiger team that's trying to not win 10 games to go win a national championship, if your mind and your heart isn't all in the locker room, go. Go. I mean, there is no begging. There is no begging. So if you want to go, go. You know, I'm really looking forward to what could be the best LSU tight end room we have ever seen. So I have had a few questions as far as these hats are concerned. A few of you want to get this PHO hat that was personally made for me. If you do want one, you have to shoot me a message at Power Hour LSU. If I get enough people interested in wanting the new PHO hat, we can make them. I spoke with the distributor today, who is actually one of our viewers, and we can work something out, but I do need to have a certain amount of people that want to get them. I probably won't make any money off of it, but a few of you want to look as good as me. I totally get that. So there you go. Now, let's go to Brian here. And by the way, if you do super, obviously, we go straight to your topic. And what are we giving out today? Let's see. Here's a big one. the guy I wanted to talk about right here. This is one of Jacobian Guillory's rarest cards right here. A one-of-one Jacobian Guillory autograph. I got a call today from someone who was at practice, okay? And he said, Carter, today was the best day for the LSU defense. Now, we'll talk to our guest, Matthew Broom, here in a second. And look, apparently today at practice, the LSU defense did really well. Now, there was no cameras allowed at practice. Now, LSU shot some footage, and I will say, I did hear quite a bit of good things when it comes to this LSU defense today. I was told today, Jared, thank you for your super, that Savion Jones dominated. And not just dominated, he went up against Emory Jones and beat him a few times. That never happens. Emory Jones and Will Campbell never get beat in practice. Today that happened. I also heard Jacobian Guillory, who's playing for something a little bit more important. And I feel like I can say this publicly because Jacobian's dad is a supporter of ours here. Guillory's a dad. He had his youngin', and he is playing for something bigger than himself. And I'm really pumped up about that, right? I am hearing some good things from Jacobian Guillory. I always felt he was more of your rotational number three type of defensive tackle, like a Marlon Favorite level player, a guy who's really good, a starter-ish level player who can give you some dominant games. They're really going to need him, right? If we can get Marlon Favorite out of Jacobian Guillory this year, this LSU defense has some juice, right? I'm hearing some really good things, though, from Guillory, which excites me. Now, I understand this is just one day of practice, and you would love to see the LSU defense to have at least one day of dominance. But we need him. We need Guillory's leadership. He is a guy that has seen so many different defensive tackle coaches, defensive line coaches coming in and out that door. Today was a pretty nice day for him in terms of that. So really excited about Jacobian Guillory and his development. Now, the next thing. I am starting to truly believe the best corner on this team is PJ Woodland or Ashton Stamps. This will be one of the youngest and lowest rated cornerback duos we have ever seen at LSU. But if this is what the staff feels is the best step forward for LSU, let's do it. I will also say I've seen some good reps in practice from JV and Tovian. Obviously had his legal problems dealt with. Okay. So in the background, you're taking a look at this rep right here from PJ Woodland. In almost every rep, you see PJ Woodland going up against Ashton Stamps. And one thing that I love about this clip in particular, look at Blake Baker. Look at Blake Baker jumping all over him, right? Look at this. He is really coaching this group up. Woodland might be your guy. And I'll be honest, there have been a lot of clips that we've seen PJ Woodland getting absolutely mollywopped by Kyron Lacy. That's not a worry for me. That's not a worry for me at all. I like that. You know, you're getting growing pains against receivers that are better than you. So it's one of those things where We'll see how this actually works out for PJ Woodland going into next year. We will. Now, Pegasus says, is Mac okay? He is. He's healthy. He just, you know, and look, college football is hard. He wants to go somewhere where he can play. And look, it's hard. College football, it's a mental test, especially when you get passed up. But, you know, I wish him nothing but the best, and we will recover. And we stay out of cliff. Patriot says Jacobian's interview on Tiger Bay was one of the best he's seen. Yeah. I still enjoy college football 25. I haven't been able to play as much as I want to. Maybe we should fire up a stream here in just a second. Let's see. Fifth hour in. Bruce, good to see you. Let's see. Chat, good to have you. Yeah, it's good to be back. Wasn't really much of a hiatus, though. We're still rocking and rolling. you know, one area that is very interesting for LSU, you know, going into next year, outside of just this tight end room lightening up just a little bit, I am interested, and this was one of our deeper sleeper players, and I also probably need to confirm because players do leave from time to time. Giovanni Peterson is someone that interests me. I don't think he is bad at all. I think he's solid. I think he can give you some SEC reps as a deep sleeper tight end. He's a former walk-on who's given LSU something. And look, if we can't find, let's just say Kamarion Pimpton still struggles in the goal line blocking situations, he might be a guy that plays a little bit more. Remember, Connor Galbraith is not on the team anymore. So it's very interesting. Okay. We say hi to Cliff. Good to see you. But there you go. Now, next thing. There has been a huge push today from quite a few people to tell me that the defense was really good today, as we just mentioned. But am I a little concerned about Garrett Nussmeier? Not really, as far as like some of the turnovers you've seen in practice, some of the miscues. I see he's missed Chris Hilton a few times. There's been a few miscommunications, not only in like the actual practices, but in some of the one-on-one portions. There was a miss with CJ Daniels in a one-on-one. I don't mind if a quarterback is missing in practice. I really, really, really don't. Especially Garrett Nussmeier, right? Who is probably just sick and tired of throwing 1,000 passes in practice compared to actual games. So I think Garrett is one of those competitive gamers. When the lights go on, he's just going to play better. But I'll also say, as far as Garrett's growth, the one area where he just cannot slip back into temptation are the turnovers in plus territory. I can live with a midfield turnover. I can live with a second and 13 turnover from time to time, or a deflected turnover, or a miscue. But what I can't live with are the turnovers that take points off the board. Now, that was more of an issue in his early career from the Purdue game and backwards. Last year, he was a lot better in that category, not turning the football over in plus territory. One thing, though, that will be interesting: will the offense for LSU be condensed? And what I mean by that is, how heavy will the rotation be? I reached out to John Eads. He's a really good reporter for WAFB, and he tweeted out a video earlier today of my guy, Xavion Thomas. He's who I think will be LSU's second most productive receiver behind Kyren this year. Xavion is going through a hamstring issue. And we saw this a few years ago with Jack Besh going into year two at LSU. He had some lower body injury issues, and it caused him to slip on the depth chart, and he really never recovered. So what's going to be interesting, if Xavion can't fully be healthy, could this wide receiver room this year just be dominated by three guys? Chris Hilton, Kyren Lacy, and CJ Daniels. It very well could be. It very well could be. And there are so many interesting names when you point to wide receiver that could do something special for LSU this next year. What I would like to see, though, is I don't just want receivers to play because they're good. I want the receivers to play that work best with Garrett Nussmeier. And two players we know that work well with Garrett Nussmeier is Chris Hilton and Kyren Lacy. And most notably, Kyren Lacy, right? Because Kyren was a true second teamer who worked a lot with Garrett in year one. And then in year two, he became more of a starter. He is a good bridge receiver to bring it all together. Let's go to Cliff here. He says, Ashton Stamps is playing like a number one corner. I would say him, he's been the best corner. I like what I've seen from Woodland, but Ashton Sampson, PJ Woodland are probably your starting corners alongside potentially Sage Ryan. At this point, as much experience as Sage brings to the secondary, I would prefer the corners be Ashton Sampson, PJ Woodland, because we know what Sage Ryan is at corner. And Sage Ryan at corner, even though the PFF grade says he's probably been a little bit better than what LSU football fans think of him, I would still prefer him play safety. And if I were to guess today, the starting LSU secondary next year this year versus USC here in a couple weeks, it will be Ashton Stamps, PJ Woodland, Jarden Gilbert, Sage Ryan, and Major Burns. Now, I think the straw that stirs the drink will be Major Burns. Can he play this nickel role where I think teams are going to pepper him with targets, really push his coverage ability? I think that's what they're going to do. They're going to try and spread us out, and they're going to run a lot of these option routes with the slot receivers and really try to spread us out. Now, there's ways you can combat that, but I expect to see a lot of slot fades thrown Major Burns' way. And we'll see. We'll see if that happens this next year. And look, Major might be up to the task. I've been told that he feels a lot more comfortable there. They feel he's reading the game better. They feel he's always felt more like a player who fits this role, who can also, in some heavier sets, give you, in this nickel-ish kind of package, a guy who's a thumper in the box, right? Hell, he wears a neck roll, for goodness sakes. How many DBs do you know that wear a neck roll? So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be, to me, one of the key pieces. Now, as far as today's practice is concerned, it's going to change. I mean, hell, they're practicing tomorrow. There's so much fluctuations. We talked about Savion Jones. We talked about Jacoby and Guillory. Let's see. There was someone else defensively I wanted to mention. Okay. One player that does interest me, and I do think this is one of the few guys that probably fit what Matt House was doing a little bit better than what Blake Baker's doing, but that doesn't mean he can't play in this system. Kalaj Cobbins has gotten some interesting buzz from camp. Now, he is not the biggest guy. He is a pure bender, and he's more of your traditional two-point stance, edge rusher type of players. I do view him more as a year two guy, but we still don't fully know what all is going on here. And we'll talk about this coming up after this break. We still don't know fully what's going on here with Braden Swenson and potentially Jalen Lee. I do think we'll be okay with those two, but LSU really doesn't have a bender, right? I still like Gabriel Relaford. Like I said, Savion Jones, really good day today at practice. Really good day. All right. We have got to have one bender. All right. A guy who makes offensive tackles get out of their kick stance that much quicker. And Cobbins might be that guy. He might be the edge that you need. And the good thing about that is you got one role if you're on the field. Just go after it. Get upfield, see what you can do. So a little bit of a deeper cut guy. Obviously, Relaford has been the edge player. He's been on this channel. He's a guy that has really tickled the fancy of a lot of LSU fans based on his spring game performance. But also in that spring game, Cobbins also had some bending reps that were very interesting. Destrehan High School. We know how many gyms at Destrehan High School has produced at LSU. So I just wanted to point that out. Now, coming up next, we do have our first PHL guest, a first timer. I'm going to need you to make him feel welcome. Should you be concerned with some of the turnovers from Garrett Nussmeier? I will say, the guest we have coming up next, when he first got to LSU, he was one of the biggest supporters of Garrett Nussmeier. So he's watched almost every single throw he has had up to this point in his career. And you'll hear from him right after this, baby. Let's go. Home is where the heart is. And our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. His name is Matthew Bruhn. You can follow him on Three Sports. Matthew Bruhn's name on Twitter. Matthew, you've been in practice.
Yes.
Your thoughts on what you've seen from Garrett Nussmeier up to this point?
Yeah, so coming in to today, I'd say it's been pretty lukewarm, kind of at best. And like you said, and I guess, you know, introducing me, coming out, I remember Nussmeier's first year here. Obviously, he was next to Max Johnson, and you could just tell the way he threw the ball next to Max Johnson. It was a little different coming out of his hands, the pop and whatnot. So then you see all the flashes, and, you know, just throughout the years, it's always been Garrett Nussmeier's talent has kind of superseded him. It's been kind of what we've been waiting for. And now coming into camp, after a really strong spring, I'd say, I think he's been, you know, maybe a little disappointing, and I think that's okay. I don't think that means that he's done for the season. I don't think that means we need to sell stock, but, coming off the Wisconsin game, especially, it was like, I was ready to kind of anoint him honestly as a first round pick for next year. And I still think that's a possibility, but he has been kind of a little up and down through the first four practices. But I do think today was his best day by far. Okay. I think a lot of people in the media, you know, saw the same thing. He was crisp, clean, intermediate, short routes. He had Lacy on a deep ball. I think it was his best performance. And I kind of like that he had to go through a little bit of struggle early in camp and overcome it. So I'm still very, very high on Garrett Nussmeier. He's going to be really good. And, you know, he's getting through some fall camp jitters, I guess.
Yeah. So would you expect the same Garrett Nussmeier you saw versus Wisconsin in the second half versus Georgia going into this next year?
I do. Personally, I think he's going to be awesome. I think the receivers are there. Obviously, we know the offensive line game is going to be there, and the run game will help them as well. So I think this is all setting up for Garrett Nussmeier to come into a very favorable situation. A lot of people, you know, will talk about Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels needing that second year to kind of get to the Heisman level that they want to go to. I would argue Nussmeier is stepping into a significantly better situation than either one of them were in their first year. So that's, I think Nussmeier is set up for to have just a really, really big year.
How do you feel the pass catching hierarchy will work out based on what you've seen in practice and based on what you're hearing at this point?
Yeah, I think the top three are set even before kind of Xavion missed a couple practices with the hamstring. I think that the starters are set. You have Kyren Lacy, number one guy to me, I think pretty comfortably going to be over 1,000 yards receiving. Then you have two and three in whatever order, whatever hierarchy, you know, they've all been lining up in different positions. They've all had turns in the slot, tight, wide. Chris Hilton and CJ Daniels are going to start next to Kyron Lacy. So you have those three, and then after that is where it gets interesting. That after that is where you can really start to figure out, you know, who's going to be the next receiver in terms of receptions. I'm hesitant to say that's going to be Aaron Anderson, because last year at this time, I think I was really high on Aaron Anderson as well. And then as the kind of year goes on, you kind of see his maybe limitations. So yeah, I'd say Xavion Thomas, Aaron Anderson are probably the favorites there. And then you go down to, we'll see if Shelton Sampson can continue to have a good fall. We'll see if Kyle Parker can have a nice, you know, a couple weeks here. So that's kind of the mix after the top three.
Mac Markway's out the picture. Yeah. How do you feel about the tight end? You know, it's been such a heavy snap count for Mason Taylor over the past couple of seasons. I understand, you know, you want to keep him on the field as much as possible because he's your best blocker at tight end as well. But do you think you could see, you know, more Kamarion Pimpton as the guy, or do you think Trey S. Green could be an inline tight end based on what you've seen thus far?
I think Pimpton's definitely a step ahead of where Green is in terms of being an inline guy. And that's to be expected, right? He's had a full year ahead of him. The thing is I do think it is a significant blow in terms of last year. We saw how much when they went 12 personnel, it was Markway and Taylor. Right. It was using them in the run game effectively. It honestly allowed Mason Taylor to maybe be a receiver in those 12 personnel sets and keep Markway in. And you could just do a lot more things in those sets. So I do think it's significant. I think they were maybe not prepared for this, but they were already using Kamarion Pimpton a lot more as camp was going on. It kind of felt like the writing was on the wall a little bit. Not that Markway wasn't going to play, because I think he definitely would have, but that Pimpton was going to eat into those snaps fairly significantly. So I think Pimpton's made strides as a blocker. I'm personally not as high on him as a receiver in terms of like when comparing him to like a Trey S. Green.
Okay.
But obviously he can catch the ball. He has a good catch radius. He's a good receiver. So like I'm good with that aspect of it.
Obviously DJ Chester is, you know, the unknown in this LSU offensive line room. How have the snaps been, and how do you feel LSU feels about him?
I think LSU feels good, but just watching practices, it's clear Brad Davis, like when you have a room where four of your five guys are already like locked in, put in stone, that you know what you're going to get out of them 5 days a week. They're going to bring the effort, leadership, all that stuff. It feels like Brad Davis is like, all right, we have one guy here that can kind of take us to a ceiling of being the Joe Moore Award, winners this year, or just being a really good offensive line. Like that's the difference. And I think that difference is DJ Chester. I came into the offseason, or really throughout the offseason, saying Chester was going to be better than Charles Turner. I think he physically obviously is better than Charles Turner, but we know how valuable Charles Turner was in terms of communication, being a leader, and there's a reason why he held that spot for 2 years. So I don't want to undersell that aspect of it. Chester has to develop in that regard, and honestly, even in one-on-ones the past couple of days, he hasn't been great. So I do wonder how he continues to develop in the coming weeks.
For you, you look at the running back room. These touches can go in many different ways. So many people are anointing Caleb Jackson as the guy. But how do you feel about how this will be spread out over the next, not just game versus USC, but over the first few weeks of the season?
Yeah, I felt really good about it going in because Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson as a 1-2 punch is really good, in my opinion. And right. I think they're going to be formidable. The thing that's been interesting throughout this fall camp is John Emery. I was not expecting John Emery to come out and get like just as many. And I know snap counts is relative because obviously they're trying to see different things in different packages, whatever. And they don't need to see Josh Williams per se. But John Emery is getting a ton of snaps, just a ton of snaps. And coming off the ACL injury he had, I was not expecting him to come step in and just start getting like 40% of the snaps. So now if John Emery is healthy and he has the burst, which honestly, he's looked just so much better than I thought he would look. Now you have like a three-headed monster in those three, in Josh Williams, Caleb Jackson, John Emery. I still think Caleb Jackson is going to lead the team in rushing. I think he's just going to have the most, not only explosive plays, but just kind of the most carries. I think he ends up with it. Josh Williams will get the snaps as a receiver, pass as a pass protector, and occasionally, obviously, as a runner. We know he's a tough guy, but I do think it sets up Caleb Jackson to be the number one guy. How much, you know, percentage-wise, I don't know, but I think he leads the team in rushing.
The biggest sleeper on LSU's defense, someone that no one has mentioned, no one's really talking about, but someone that you've seen in practice and someone you personally, Matthew, feel great about, who is that guy?
I thought you were leading me up to ask me about a specific player, and you left an open-ended question, hold on.
You take your time, man.
No, let me think.
And so while you think about it, make sure you go give Matthew a follow on the twitter.com. Oh God, this cover photo. We have
from San Antonio.
We have an Argentine to the far left. For those that don't know, the Argentine to the far left, that is Lionel Messi. And to the far right, that is Kylian Mbappe. Those are the only Argentine and French athletes that I recognize. I'm kidding, obviously. Ginobili! And we got Tony Parker. I interviewed Tony Parker once, and this guy was kind of good at basketball, too, in the middle.
I've had that as my header for so long, I forgot that it was there, honestly.
You're a North Texas guy.
Yeah.
But you're a Spurs guy.
I'm from San Antonio. So San Antonio, went to school in North Texas, and then thankfully made my way over here. So, all right, a player that I'm high on, a player that I've seen a lot in camp that I think is going to be really good. Let's think for a second here.
It could be defense or offense.
You know, let's stick on defense, because this is the interesting part, right? Talking defense and talking about who's going to be good. Honestly, I think Ashton Stamps has kind of even exceeded my expectations, which obviously I think a lot of people had high expectations going in, but he's kind of locked down the number one corner spot, in my opinion. I think he's just been that consistent guy. And, you know, they threw Sage Ryan over there. And so I'm not sure exactly how the order will work out. I'm not sure exactly how, you know, schematically it'll work out. But, and especially once Zay Alexander, you know, gets back to 100%. I think PJ Woodland's been really good. All these guys. But I do think Ashton Stamps has a pretty good hold on a starting cornerback position right now. I just think he's been really active. I think he's been really sharp. He said after last year that he was injured, playing through injury. And I think he looks even better than what he was last year. So I don't want to set expectations too high, but I definitely think Ashton Stamps has lived up to the billing in terms of a guy who's stepped up in year two.
I'm telling you, man. I remember when he was coming out, I was like, I actually didn't have a great grade on him because, you know, I do my own rankings. I try and be like you guys at On Three or whatever and try and predict. And I was like, okay, I think he's solid. But man, I was like, what was I missing? And he trained at DPT, which like a big training facility where, you know, Devonta Smith and all these guys, the dude just put in work, man. You could see the body change. You could see how important he wanted it. And, you know, you go to all these camps, you're plugged in and all this stuff. It seemed like he was just one of these camp guys that just really worked for that LSU offer, and he really wanted it to work out.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you this later, but when you go to these camps, is it better to like actually be there in person when it comes to like these evaluations? Do you see the separation between a potential like 3-star diamond in the rough who could move up the rankings?
Yeah, I definitely think it's beneficial. I've gone, this is now 3 years in a row. I'll never forget last year when I saw Bryce Underwood for the first time. And that was as soon as I walked on the field, and I just saw, I forgot what number he was wearing, but hit him throwing. And I was like, oh, that's gotta be Bryce Underwood. That's Bryce Underwood. And so you can tell, there've been a lot of those types, like Michael Turner this past year was a camp guy who they liked at receiver, but then obviously now he's playing corner. He's just incredibly fat. Honestly, they offered him once he ran his 40. So it's kind of like those situations happen a lot. There's a lot of players that they already have in the boat. And then you see those guys every year. There's one or two that come through the camps and they pop. I think Ashton Stamps, I'm kind of with you out of Ashton Stamps, I wasn't super high on as a prospect. I will give a shout out to Shea Dixon. Sure everybody knows Shea Dixon, but Shea was the guy who was like, Ashton Stamps is a player. And so I'll give him his flowers on that, because I didn't fully see it in terms of the physical aspect. But yeah, he's just a dog. He's awesome. So I feel this. I feel like even stronger about PJ Woodland. I had PJ Woodland as like 11th in my class rankings this past year.
Okay, so you did your LIA. Did
you? Oh yeah, I did them. I do them every year. I'm not a. I don't claim to be a professional. You know, like like you said, the Cody Belair and the there are all these guys that actually rank them for a living. But yeah, I don't claim to do that, but. I have some fun. It's why we do the job, right? So it's around things and conversate.
Everyone should make their own board, because you see how hard it is.
Oh,
and I will say, the services have gotten better. I get no money from On3. I get no money from 247. I know you're employed by On3, obviously, but they've gotten better in their evaluation processes. So I'll ask you this as well. I know you're not an evaluator. You're a reporter. But how do those evaluations work? Does someone ever reach out to you that goes to those camps and actually goes into the rankings? How does On3 actually put together their players?
You mean at the top, not me, right?
Yeah, not you. Okay, yeah, okay. Let's go to the top. What is their process like? Or if you can share what the process?
No, I mean, I've been around it long enough to where I feel like I have a good handle. But even obviously, I don't, you know. Talk to them every day or get into the details. But you know, every time there's a commit, they'll write up their full 500 word report on each player and whatnot. They see a lot of these guys in person. Like, there are regional guys for On3 and 24/7 that you can cover the entire country with how many guys there are that do recruiting and their ranking staff. So they see pretty much all these guys in person. I know On3 has, you know, I think Cody Belair he's from Louisiana, I think, something like that.
Yeah, he worked at LSU,
Yeah, he worked at LSU, I know that. And then, like, Sam Spiegelman, who used to work for On3, now works at Rivals. He lives in New Orleans. Like, so the Louisiana guys, I feel like, there's always the joke of every fan base thinks their guys in their state are underrated, under-recruited, that, sure. But I feel like Louisiana gets evaluated incredibly, incredibly well, like, in terms of just always seeing guys, and there are guys like Gabriel Relliford last year, right, that didn't get ranked until like 2 months before signing or whatever it was, and he shoots up and On3 has him as like a borderline or like a top 100 guy, and it was just like, where did this come from? I think a lot of it is in person. I think you know, a lot of it will surely be seeing them in camp settings, because they go to these camps just as well for all the schools, and you know that how many camps there are. Watching the game tape, talking to coaches. I think it's a lot of different things. But yeah, to your point, I think it's just gotten so accurate right now. I mean, it's incredible. There are coaches. I remember we went out practice 2 days ago, or no, Monday, and Brad Davis was getting on Weston Davis. I included this in my report after practice. He was getting on Weston Davis. He said, "Come on, five-star. You're going to learn how to work hard here." And it's like I think Shea posted on our board, is like, only one recruiting outlet had him as a five-star. So you know which one he's checking.
There you go. That's good. Yeah.
It's just fun, stuff like that. Like, coaches are funny.
Yeah. What's because of that, I actually changed my own grading scale, and I actually use recruiting rankings quite a bit. And if there is a player that, like, I really am like, I don't really see him as a five-star, I have to really watch him. I try and I call a coach and I'm like, can you send me a full game film so I can watch like the full snaps? And we had a personnel director on last week, a former personnel director. And dude, like, it's so crazy how different the actual teams do it. Like, they do full game scouts on top of it. And one thing for me, Matthew, that I've started to do is I actually look at the camp stuff almost more then I look at the actual high school film stuff, because you're going up against more different players. Like, if you have, you know, just a 10-minute reel of you going up against the same 5'5" offensive tackle, that's not telling me shit.
Well, for instance, this is an easy one, but Jakeem Stewart, I'll never forget. 2 years ago, he was going in to be a freshman, and we watched him at the camp, and he's going up against, obviously, like, class of whatever the classes was, like 2023 or something, 2026. You're just like, okay, this dude is incredible, like straight off the rip. And then he's gone to every camp since then. He's gone 3 straight years to LSU camps. And so I, and obviously all the evaluation teams, is like, we know exactly what this dude is. He's the best player in the country for 2026. Like, he is incredible. And if he reclasses, he'll be a 5-star in 2025 or whatever happens there. But like, yeah, you have a good handle on players at that point.
Yeah. And one thing about, you know, Will Campbell that I always liked, this tells me a kid's competitiveness at those camps, because he always lined up against Walter Nolan and always lined up against like the best of the best. And for those who don't know, if you go to these camps, there are ways you can go around going up against the other alphas. And Will Campbell was never afraid of doing that. That shows me a lot. Defensively, obviously, there's been a big concern about the LSU defensive line.
Yeah.
Have you seen some optimism? I heard some good things from today. Are you getting a little bit more bullish on that group?
Today was a much better day than Monday. Not only in individuals, where for 2 straight days, we've been able to, the way that they've set it up is, I feel like personally, sometimes when they do stuff the media doesn't want to see, we're on like the, I don't know how to word it, like the right sideline. And there's obviously 4 practice fields. They do like 7-on-7 or something on like the far side, to where like we got to like stand up and, you know, or get an angle just to watch it. But on the near side, while they were doing 7-on-7, they put O-line, D-line, 1-on-1s right in front of us. So I'm there writing down every rep. I wrote down every rep. It's on the practice report that I wrote up, which was, you know, it was like 8-10 minutes, whatever. But on Monday, the offensive line rarely lost a rep. Today it was even, almost, I want to say. Like, I thought Guillory had some really good reps. You know how strong Guillory is. So it's just, once he puts it together, it's really, really impressive. Paez, you know, had some ups and downs Monday. I think he showed a little bit more flashes. And then I think you get immediately, in my opinion, the 3rd best defensive tackle was Dominic McKinley already, which is kind of crazy. JVR Suggs had a really good day as well today, so I'll give him a shout out. But like, that's kind of where I'm at with the defensive tackle spot is, I think they're getting better. I think they're getting obviously coached at a high level. And now that we've seen them in one-on-one settings, and then as we were in the last session we had, they were doing 11-on-11. I believe they got a sack on Ricky Collins, and I didn't get to see exactly who the DTs were. But like, again, you're just starting to see some progress from that group in terms of hoping and believing that they're going to be not a catastrophic weakness.
Off-ball linebackers just look like what?
You mean off of the edge? You mean in a...
just your typical box, like Harold Perkins, Greg Penn.
Yeah, so like Will and Mike.
Yeah, Will and Mike, yes.
I thought we were going back to Jack linebacker spot there. Yeah, Greg Penn, Harold Perkins. It's hard to evaluate, and I said this before, it's hard to evaluate run defense, obviously, when they're not in pads and not tackling. Yeah. So like, you know, they it's either whistle dead when they get touched, or it's like they just run through it and you don't know. So I'm excited to see tomorrow, or is it Thursday? One of two, they put pads on for the first time, and I'm excited to see the linebackers actually hit somebody. I'm excited to see them take on full speed blocks. Overall, I think Greg Penn looks more athletic, which sounds like camp talk already, but like, I think he does kind of look a little bit more fluid than he's been in years past. Obviously, Harold Perkins, that's who I want to see the pads on for more than anything, is Harold Perkins. But the Weeks brothers, I think, are going to be solid. So I feel good about the linebackers. I just need to see the pads go on and see people start hitting people.
Yeah. One thing I like about you, and I do this well, or I try to do this as well. You actually like going back and watching games. Like, a lot of people just like to go to the next game.
Yeah.
And I have been labeled a huge Blake Baker homer. Carter, you're just blowing smoke. They don't have the personnel to pull it off next year. And look, I know that there is some concerns both internally and externally. Does the LSU defense have enough going into next year? And I have been labeled the biggest Matt House hater of all time since day one. That's fine. Matt House did some good things, obviously did a lot of bad as well. I just like Blake Baker's energy, right? There was a player who told me it's just different. And I was like, okay, don't BS me. Don't blow. So he's like, no, I actually like being here and playing with this guy. So the schematics, obviously Blake Baker is going to be great this year, but you're there. Do you feel it? You were there at the practices with Matt House.
Yeah.
Now you are there with the practices with Blake Baker. So you boots on the ground. Am I just blowing smoke up my viewers' ass, or is this a real tangible thing?
First of all, someone commented, said, word on the street is you got House fired. So,
well, yeah, dude, it never fails. It never, everyone has said that.
Well, to give you complete credit, obviously I've seen some of your videos before and some of your lives and stuff, and you do a fantastic job at going back and breaking things down. Like, you're obviously one of the best in doing it. So it's like there was very clearly not only a schematic problem and a personnel problem, but there was also an energy and a passion problem that last year's defense had. Like, this is not being made up here. When House was gone, Braden Swenson posted a video of him kicking rocks and said to kick rocks. Like, there are players that I think honestly maybe transferred out because not even without even knowing who the next defense coordinator was, just because of the taste they got. Like, it's a very real thing. And so if nothing else, we think the schematics are going to be better, which I think is a fair assumption. The coaching from day one should be better. Like, just the staff in general, Davis, Baker, like, these are more proven guys in terms of records in their coaching careers. But like, the want to is going to be better. And that is significantly more important to me than honestly almost anything else. And so if that's the case, you have Braden Swenson, like I said, who wants to go to practice every day and wants to get better and wants to actually work. And that's a different energy than it was last year. So I do agree. Being in those House practices, I do think it was like, we don't get to see it during the season, but going into the season, a lot of it was like almost walking on eggshells a little bit.
Yes.
Because it felt like House almost, I don't know how to word this, but House almost like said, y'all need to do this better. And it wasn't really like, it didn't feel like it was a lot of accountability. And maybe I'm wrong, but it didn't feel like it. Baker feels like a guy that will get in the trenches with you and fight. And so that's just where I'm at. It feels a little bit different going into this year.
I'm excited, man. I'm excited. So I will say, I don't know Blake personally. I do know some of his friends, and I do want Blake to succeed. Do not know him personally, but I do think he is going to be really, really, really good. If you don't believe me, watch the Tennessee game plan. It was a thing of beauty, what he conjured up versus the Volunteers. This is kind of out of left field, but actually, no, before I get into this question, you're going to love this question in a second, but you've been into the Brian Kelly press conferences. What is the latest with, I know he mentioned something about Braden Swenson and Jalen Lee. Along with that, was there anything specific that you've taken from Brian Kelly's press conferences that you think it's very important for my audience to know?
Yeah, first of all, availability, like you mentioned, Swenson and Lee both are finishing up their classes, their summer classes. You said they're both Spanish classes, Spanish 4. I minored in Spanish, and so really? I know what my Spanish 4 is like. It's definitely not a joke. Especially when you're a non-native speaker and you get into those classes where you're with all native speakers. You got to humble yourself real quick. You just can't care. You got to just. So anyways, Swenson and Lee are going through that right now. So I thoughts to prayers for them. Xavier Thomas hamstring. I think he'll be fine. Obviously those are kind of tricky, so you don't want to rush those back. But yeah, overall, I think Brian Kelly, he's been asked a lot about the underclassmen, right? Freshmen, sophomores, and all this stuff. Like, that happens every single year with every coach across the country, is why isn't X playing? Why isn't Y playing? I think that he's handled it well in terms of not trying to humble them, maybe is the wrong word, but like, he's been saying, you know, PJ Woodland made a play. PJ Woodland didn't make a play. Tre'Davious Green makes a play, didn't make a play. So then it's like, he's trying not to set expectations too high, but ultimately I think for this team to get where they need to go, I do think they are not only going to be critical for the depth, but they're going to have to make just a couple plays. If they don't start, they're going to have to make some plays. PJ Woodland, Tre'Davious Green, you know, Phil, Caden Durham, maybe Dominic McKinley, Phil, you can go down the list. But I do think he has given us insight to saying, like, those guys are really good. he just doesn't want to put expectations on them in terms of having them be major contributors. Because honestly, if this team is going to get where it wants to go, the guys that are returning, the guys that are upperclassmen, obviously have to be really good.
One thing I also, and Brian Kelly's been like, there's been a lot of criticisms, and some of them are valid about Brian Kelly not playing some of the younger guys, mm-hmm. right? You know, there wasn't a week that went by later in the year. Why in the Weeks brothers playing or whatever? Yeah. I think Witt's going to play a lot. I don't think that's really a mystery going into next year. But one thing that was explained to me is college football is so old right now. The COVID year is still a real thing.
Yeah.
I do a lot of Arkansas breakdowns, and you got to keep in mind, they don't get trade as greens at Arkansas, guys that are ready to play right now. So what do? Their whole defense is year five, year six journeymen from Bowling Green and stuff. And yeah, there are younger players on LSU's team that are better than some of the older players out there. But if you're 18 years old, going up against dudes that are 25 with tattoos on, it's
families.
Yes. Some of these teams can have guys that can file for AARP, man. I mean, it is ridiculous how old college football is. So keep that in mind when it comes to the youth and old thing, because it is a lot harder playing as a true freshman when all these teams have all these experienced guys on year six.
And I actually went to bat for Brian Kelly. I don't remember what week it was. It was one of my longer rants of last year was coming to the defensive end because for that reason. I said, college football is not getting younger. Like the top teams are not getting overwhelmingly younger, right? The portal has made everybody get older. So while yes, they maybe should be playing Whit Weeks, maybe they should be playing, you know, fill in the blank here. That's not fixing the problem in the way that you think it's going to fix the problem here.
Yeah.
You had to have A, fixed this problem before the season, and B, just obviously have better coaches, better players, all this stuff. Like, there's not a hot fix for this. And so I'm going into a game as a coach saying Major Burns has not been great, but I know he's not going to like bust in coverage most of the time.
Yeah.
Like at the communication aspect, at least is there. Like we saw in the spring game at times, like when you throw in new faces, Jordan Gilbert and Sage Ryan and whoever else was on the field, like new positions, new players, busted coverage, boom, touchdown. Yeah. Like the hope I think they had was that we're at least going to make teams work for it. And whether that's right or not, I don't think it mattered, but like there was just a lot of play this guy to fix this problem. And it's not linear like that.
This was actually going to be my extra question. And Chance is my most loyal. He thinks like me.
Awesome.
I wanted to talk about Kim Mulkey. All right. For those who don't know, you're kind of the women's basketball guy. Like you go to
That's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do. I got here Kim Mulkey's first year.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm just going to cover women's basketball because I obviously know of Kim Mulkey and I think it'd be fun. And little did I know they'd win a championship year too. So that's basketball in general is my main sport. So I always love covering them. But yeah, continue.
So you go to every practice, you go to every game, or at least try to.
Yeah.
The team is in Greece right now, which I think it's good team building.
I did not make the cut to go to Greece. No.
Yeah, you should have. Right. You'd fit in well over there. You can learn about Giannis and all kinds of fun stuff, man. You know, obviously the big story is no Angel Reese. You know, I think that could be a potential. Obviously, it could be a very bad thing. She was SEC Player of the Year, but it's going to be interesting to see how everything kind of shapes out. So, your initial thoughts first on the roster going into next year and how you think the pieces will fit in. And then we'll get back into football in a second.
Yeah, I think it's honestly the most well-rounded roster that they've had. And that's obviously saying something because they won a national championship. That team was very different. But I think going 1 through 10 of this roster, I feel really good, which has not been the case in years past. So they're deeper. I think, like you mentioned, losing Angel Reese is significant. Like there's no getting around it. And I think, and I've written about this and talked to like coaches about this and everything, it's like I think they should have gotten another center in the portal to not replace her, but just to in general add some, you know, more beef up front. we know Aliyah Del Rosario is going to be good in the front court, but ultimately this comes down to three players, and that's Flaje Johnson, that's Anissa Morrow, and that's Mikayla Williams. And those three are all conference talents, and I think they're going to be all conference players. And if they play to their potential, LSU is extremely versatile. They can attack you inside, outside, and they're just going to be really, really tough to stop. So the Angel Reese aspect of it is challenging because I don't think they replaced her well enough. But honestly, when you have this much talent, two through four, and I love the Cheyenne Day Wilson addition at point guard. She's going to be awesome. So really, one through four, I think they compete with anybody in the country.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Do you think they'll be spread out a little bit more? Because obviously Angels, you know, more of your traditional putback.
I hope so.
Yeah, because that can actually make Flaje even better in theory, right?
Yeah. Driving the lane with a little more spacing. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting. A name that a lot of people haven't really talked about, including me, because she committed so early, was Jersey Wolfenberger, who's 6'5 from Arkansas. And she was a former number six player in the country, and she's been on the wing her entire career. If they play her at the five or at the four, you know, obviously that adds spacing, that adds a different element that we've really haven't seen before in terms of a big that can handle it. So yeah, there's just a lot of versatility here. I think they're gonna have to be a little bit more spread out. I kind of said that last year, going into last year, in terms of needing to shoot more threes, which Kim Mulkey teams don't do. I think they'll be fine, but ultimately they are going to have to trust their guards a lot more than they have the last 2 years. It's going to have to look a lot more like that team in her first year with Kayla Pointer and Jalen Sherry and Alexis Morris, like that type of team, I think, more so.
So Maya Smith's going to be so big coming off this injury. I'm really excited for them. So you would say, you know, I mean, you cover the men's tournament as well. Is this an Elite Eight level roster? Is that because obviously Iowa won't be Iowa. So South Carolina is probably clear cut number one. Do you think they're in that next tier?
I think LSU is firmly a top 10 team, and I think they're gonna put, I think going into the year they're gonna end up at like the sixth spot or something like that in most of the polls. So to answer your question, yes, I do think this is an Elite Eight team. I think the expectation needs to be Final Four, honestly, which sounds maybe, you know, harsh, I guess, but you look across the country, you mentioned it, South Carolina, but I think they go to toe with honestly Texas, UConn, you know, UCLA, we just saw them beat. It's like top teams in the country. I think LSU is on par with them. And if Flaje is the star that I think she's going to be, and if Anissa's borderline All-American, which I think she's going to be, and Mikayla Williams takes that step forward, I think you have, you know, one of the best trios in the country comfortably.
Obviously, women's basketball is actually, you know, like set a viewership record more than I just mostly do football.
Why do you think I write about it so much, Carter?
Dude, like the biggest interview I've ever had on this channel was Mikayla Williams. And I've had MVPs, all that stuff on here. Mikayla, like I am so excited because I do think with the floor spaced out, we'll see Mikayla, especially getting this 3-on-3 international experience. I think it's going to do a lot of good things for her. As far as the men's team, you also do, you know, men's coverage as well. Look, LSU fans, we're spoiled in all these different sports. You got the best pole vaulters. I mean, it's everything. Your thoughts on Matt McMahon, because what makes you a little bit different compared to a few of the others that cover college basketball throughout the SEC is you're big in schematics. Hell, you're Twitter bio photo is the best schematical team ever. Those Spurs teams, right?
No.
Played a very beautiful brand of basketball. That's not what Matt McMahon's teams have done. They play, to me, a chaotic brand. Your thoughts on this year's roster and your thoughts on Matt McMahon in an SEC coaching-wise that got stronger this offseason?
Yeah. So I think to your point, in terms of perceiving it as chaos, I think a lot of that has to do with Matt McMahon not having a point guard the first 2 years of his of him being at LSU, right? Justice Hill was not an SEC player. Last year, Jalen Cook played like 10 games and basically quit. So you had like Trey Hannibal run the offense last year. This is an offense Matt McMahon needs. He needs a point guard that can run the show. And I do think he has that this year in Jordan Sears. Jordan Sears transferred from UT Martin, averaged 20 points per game, one of the leading scorers in the country. I think he was ninth in the country last year. He doesn't need to do that. He just needs to be a steadying presence that can run ball screens, that can feed like a Tyrell Ward, right? Obviously, we know how great he is as a shooter. Jalen Reed, I think Jalen Reed's going to be really good this year. Just awesome this year.
Interesting.
That's like, you know, you fill in the roster around a Jordan Sears, and I think it makes a lot more sense. I think it'll be a lot cleaner of an offense and of a team that LSU is going to have this year. I think this is LSU's best team that Matt McMahon has had. I don't know. I don't think that's a hot take, even though they went 9-9 in conference last year. But with that being said, the SEC is better this year. So what does success look like this season? I think a lot of that's going to be determined in the non-conference, which just got released today. They're going to have to do a lot of their work in the non-conference. And then if you go 9-9 again, instead of being in the NIT and losing to my North Texas Mean Green, you're going to be in the NCAA tournament. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Dude, man,
they're going to be good. They're going to be a good basketball team.
Are they
going to be good enough? And in the new SEC, I don't know what that answer is yet, because I've started to take a deeper look at the SEC basketball, and it's real. It's going to be tough.
I mean, I understand Tennessee lost Dalton Connect and all that. Dude, yeah. I don't know as much about SEC basketball as you do.
It's good.
Dude.
It'll be good.
Like, if I get another message from my Arkansas buddies, Cal, it's Cal season. And I don't think Mark Pope's going to, like, revolutionize Kentucky, but hell, it's Kentucky. Yeah. And then, I understand Rick Barnes will never win the big one, but damn, he's good.
Mississippi State is going to be really good again. They've made the tournament last year. I mean, like, Oklahoma, who I don't think is great, but, like, they'll be competitive. Texas has made an Elite Eight 2 years ago. They're going to be solid team. So if they take care of the non-conference, if they go, let's say 11-3 in non-conference, which I think is attainable to a degree, or maybe or there's 13 games, but I don't know if there's a championship in this tip-off tournament they're playing in, so I said 11-3, whatever. If they go 11-3 and they go 8-10 in conference, I think they make the tournament, so that would be a success.
I don't dislike LSU coach's name Matt. Okay, I just don't. Hell, you're on here. Your name's Matt. I like Matt's.
Why do you think it took me so long to get on this show, guys? I don't know.
I freaking love Matt's. I mean, come on. Matt's have given us. Matt's gave us Interstellar. Matt gave us first season of True Detective. Well, that was the same guy. But still, I do like Matt's overall.
Matthew McConaughey is the only Matt that has done anything.
Okay. So I will actually tell you, you might not know this, or you probably do. You know everything about basketball. But Matthew McConaughey, when he was studying to be the We Are Marshall guy, or the We Are Marshall head coach, he actually scouted out Dale Brown to mentor him on how to become a coach out of all these coaches. And McConaughey was on the field for an LSU game, and I was like, "That's McConaughey. We're the only ones wearing orange shirts." He was wearing like an orange Texas shirt, and I was wearing a unbiased member of the media orange shirt. And I was like, "Why in the hell is Matthew McConaughey? This dude was getting into action." So McConaughey is a low key LSU basketball scout. But you know, with that said, though, like I want Matt McMahon to just make the tournament. Like if you do, I'm fine. LSU's got the best women's basketball coach alive right now, or one of the three best, you could say. But I'm okay with just making the tournament. Is that too much to ask going into year three? Get me in the tournament.
I don't think it's too much to ask. I will say if he makes the tournament at LSU, it is extremely impressive. Like I don't think people understand how behind LSU men's basketball is in terms of where the SEC, like hierarchy goes in terms of like how much the fans care about it and how much the resource allocation is for basketball. Like, it's not close to Arkansas in terms of like how much resources, money, and whatnot goes into it. Like, they're still playing in the PMAC here. Like, this is, they have things working. Like, they're in Louisiana. This is not a hotbed of talent in terms of basketball talent. Now, I know Chris Sinek in 2025 class is extremely high rated. He's awesome. But like, Arkansas every year has like 2 5 stars that they recruit and they get in there. So it's like,
yeah.
You know, go down the list of schools. I'd say like LSU's on par with like Georgia in terms of like how much fans engage and care about men's basketball. So it's just a different animal. And so if he makes the tournament, I think it's a massive success. Now, I know we are always, whether consciously or subconsciously, comparing him to Will Wade, who was fantastic. But I maintain that at this point is more so the outlier than
the norm. Norm.
Like, yeah. If you just go back the past 50 years, basically. So you have Shaq, you have Will Wade, and then you have like obviously the final, the 04, 03 teams, like those teams in there that made a run. But like, those pockets are the outliers more so. And so it's if he makes the tournament, which I do think is a fair-ish expectation or a hope this year, I think he needs to be applauded at a very high level. And I will lead the applauding because I was hesitant year one as well, coming in. So
yeah, I, you know, I got excited about Will Baker and I thought he was okay overall. It's just,
I was not excited about Will Baker.
Well, that's why I defer to you for this.
Last year's team, I don't know what people thought. Well, the thing is I said, so this is the thing, last year's team, going into the year, I don't remember if I said 6 or 7 conference wins. I said one of the two. But I said if they get anything north of that, that is a major success.
Oh, okay.
And they got to 9. So I look at last year as a success. Again, did it end on a sour note? You lost in the first round of the SEC tournament. You lost in the first round of the NIT. Yes, but overall, they went 9-9 and they lost like, what was it? The Georgia game they lost on a freaking heartbreaker. They lost, what was the other game they lost on a heartbreaker? Well, Nicholls, obviously, but like Florida, right? I think Florida was a heartbreaker. Like, they could have gotten like 10-8 or they could have gone 11-7 or something, which would have been ridiculous. So I think it's all relative. They're going to be good. I think this is the best team he's had. That much I'll say.
There we go. So Matthew Breen, you can follow him on 3Sports. Even though he does have the Ginobili header, I mean, if it was a Crescent City connection, I would have shown you a little bit more love with my Pelicans. But yeah. Okay. Let me ask you this. I want to get the people mad at you. Before we go,
I work for a message board. I work on a message board. Is what I do. So,
true or false, Tim Duncan, all time better player than Shaquille O'Neal.
I thought you were gonna say Kobe Bryant. I have to actually think about this now. Hold on,
because you're wearing a Shaq shirt.
I am wearing a Shaq shirt. LSU Shaq shirt.
There we go. LSU, so are we on your all? And look, we will not cancel you for this. you got Shaq, and then you got Timmy.
I was really prepared for you to ask me Kobe Bryant.
We'll do Kobe first.
I love Kobe. I grew up. I played basketball and I played tennis growing up, and that Kobe was like my idol in terms of guys that you know, obviously competitor or whatever. But Tim Duncan, I do have above Kobe Bryant. I think I'm comfortable saying that. Shaq is a much more difficult conversation because, man, he was incredible. Tim obviously has longevity. Tim, I think, overall in his career had a better career peak. I'd probably say Shaq, but overall I'm taking Tim Duncan's, what was it, like 15 all NBAs, 12 or something all defense teams, like one of the best defensive players of all time, whereas Shaq could sometimes struggle at that end. So that's the technical answer. I don't remember where my rankings are. Obviously I'm a big rankings guy. I rank a lot of things. I I don't know why my brain is wired that way, because a lot of people hate rankings, which cool, but I love ranking things. So,
I think it's important when you rank, you do tiers, right? Yeah, like, because if you do rankings, it's linear, right? Like, this guy is better than this guy. I like today with, Mac Markway quit the team, but Kamarion Pimpton for me was on a different tier. So if Mac Markway is leaving the team for whatever reason, partially that's due to people passing him up, potentially. We all know 1,000% certainty, but you said earlier that Pimpton is starting to play a lot more. Yeah. That is a better thing because he gives you a higher upside, right? He is on a different tier when it comes to a prospect. I mean, it's a good thing overall for the upside of the team. So I think tier-wise, when it comes to peak, Shaquille O'Neal is the best big man I've ever seen.
Yeah.
B. Now, obviously, most people would probably say Wilt or Kareem, Jackie McMullen would probably say that, but people that are older than us, but Shaquille O'Neal is the most dominant basketball player I have ever seen at his peak. But when it comes to longevity, I do agree Tim Duncan was probably a little bit, more consistent and probably someone that fits into more offenses than Shaquille O'Neal. But I would go Shaq over Tim in both them. That's probably my most controversial one.
What do I have? Where are my rankings?
Or let me ask you this: how close is Jokic to those guys?
Peak wise, I think he's close. I think he's really close. Yeah. I think he's going to end up a top. He's only 29 or 30 or just turned 30, one of the two.
Yeah.
So he's still got like 5-6 years of being really good. Jokic is going to go down as a top 15 player ever. I'm comfortable saying that. Like,
so you would have him ahead of Durant right now easily for me.
No.
I would say.
The thing is, I can't. This is like, I'm already turning into one of those old heads. It's like, I can't do that already because like Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. And like, even though Jokic has 3 MVPs and he's just awesome and everything like that, I can't put him over him yet. I have Kevin Durant like top 12 all time.
Oh man.
You're not there.
No, I will say this. The Durant Warriors beats any team in a 7-game series ever. And I understand the Chris Paul Rockets almost beat them, but I'm taking the Durant Warriors over any NBA team, including the 98 Bulls, who I swear by.
Yeah.
But the Durant Warriors are beating every team in a 7-game series.
Yeah, no, that was crazy.
But Jokic is better than Durant. And if I am just doing modern era guys, Jokic, now if we're going just by since like players whose peaks were post 2000, so I'm not including Jordan in this, LeBron clear, Steph clear, Duncan clear, Shaq clear, and probably Kobe, clear of Jokic at this point. And that's
then I go Durant.
So you would put Durant.
I go Durant, then I'd go. I'd probably go Jokic after that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I think I'm gonna have Jokic over Garnett, Dirk.
Yes, same. He's gotta be.
Giannis.
He's gotta be.
Yeah.
I have Jokic and Giannis is probably a little bit closer because you could have given one of those Jokic MVPs.
Giannis might be underrated at this point. He's put together like 5 straight like top 3 seasons. He's incredible. Chance did also say that Shaq went to Cole High School in San Antonio. Fun fact, my Pop Warner football team practiced right next to Cole High School. So
there you go.
Now my Pop Warner days were very short lived in terms of I played until I was like, 11 or whatever it was. I did not play high school football. I am, not the tallest. I played basketball and tennis. So that is where my allegiance is at. But I did, Cole High School. I'm very familiar with it. Shout out Shaq.
I will say if Jokic can beat USA in this Olympic game.
Yeah, he's not beating. But yes, that would be interesting.
Well, I will say the plus minuses in that game. I know you probably saw the stat.
Yeah, that's crazy.
How many players can do that? So for those that don't know, USA and Serbia played. All right.
In the group stage.
Yeah, in the group stage. All right. And the plus minus when Jokic was on the court was zero. It was an even game. It was 81-81. But then when he wasn't on the court, it was 29-3 or something like that. I'm just saying, man.
He's incredible. I love Nikola Jokic.
He should have won four straight MVPs. Okay. No. Yes. The Embiid MVP was so fraudulent. And I am okay with giving, because this is what you, I'm not as big of an NBA head as you are. Okay. But I follow these Sam Quinn types, these big NBA writers that do Matt Moore, you know, these guys that are really into it. Yeah. And they get into like these MVP debates and it's very slippery slope. Like I get really pissed off about Chris Paul not winning the 08 MVP. Right. But the truth is Jokic should have four straight MVPs. I am okay if you give Giannis one of those for one of those years.
Yeah.
Either to win 3 years ago or whatever. But if Jokic wins four straight MVPs, it's a completely the conceptualization of it is crazy. And I will call out the NBA media for actively going against Jokic, giving him Embiid that MVP because they didn't want him winning three in a row. Am I right or am I wrong about that?
There was definitely a voter fatigue. In that respect, yes. And Embiid was campaigning for hard. It was very much a.
And he ducked him, Broom. He ducked him. Did he not duck him in the head-to-head game 10 days before the damn votes were going to be
done? Yeah, he didn't play him.
So if that was any other athlete ducking the guy head-to-head when people are sitting in their votes, they reward an MVP for fraudulence. For fraudulence. And anytime there's a big game, what happens to Joel Embiid? He crumbles. He withers.
I don't think you're wrong. Obviously, Joel hasn't been to a conference finals. Like this is, it's a very real thing here. It's Joel, Giannis, Nikola Jokic. Like those are that's honestly like the big three of the past, like 3 or 4 years. And right. So it's, Jokic is going to end up being, like I said, a top 15 player of all time. I'm interested to see how the next few years go. If he doesn't win another title, then it's, I don't know how high he pushes.
Okay. This is where I would push back though. This is where I would push back just a little bit. All right. Jamal Murray is not doing well right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is his number two. All right. So, Matthew, look, you know NBA better than I do. Sure. How many number twos are weaker than Jamal Murray on championship teams?
I think you're fair. I think it's fair. But at the same time, if we just go to this past season, they lost the game 7 where they were up 30 points and end up losing the game. What was it? They got lost game 6. I get the games confused. They lost.
They choked one.
They choke a game away and then they end up losing. It was game 7. Yeah, they blew game 7 and they end up losing. So it's like, it's not like they lost to the Timberwolves. It's not like they're over here losing to the 17 Warriors or the 14 Spurs or the like. I'm just saying. I mean,
but why did they lose?
It's going to be interesting.
Why did they lose?
Jokic wasn't fans great that game. I'd have to go back and watch it, but I don't think he was great that game. If he keeps losing to the damn Timberwolves, I don't want to hear it. But yes, if the Timberwolves or if Wembanyama if the Spurs have Wembanyama and add like Anthony Edwards or something like that, then okay, sure, you get a pass. But you can't lose to the Timberwolves throw out a team, I don't know, the Suns or something, and expect me, or the Mavericks, and expect me to give you, you know, a pat on the back.
If a 7-game series was played this year, would the Nuggets have beaten the Celtics?
No.
I agree. I'm with you on that. It was Boston's year.
No, yeah, that was a scary team. That was a scary
Boston
team.
No, they were good.
I'll tell you what, I've ranked the best 100 teams in NBA history.
Okay.
And Celtics are top 20.
What, this Celtics?
Yeah, the Celtics are top 20. And not only off of eye test, but resume as well. Resume plays a factor in it. They won. They went, was it 16-2 in the playoffs? 64 wins in the regular season. One of the best plus or net ratings ever. Like, they just killed everybody. They just killed everybody.
Yeah, they
it didn't feel like it. It didn't feel like that Celtics team was incredible, but until they just kill you, everybody, and then it's like people try to like write them off, and then they had those random losses or random like collapses or close wins.
I'll also say this: I'm not a huge Tatum guy,
but
I do like the Spurs kind of teams that are actual teams, right? Like that play team ball. It's not hero ball. And look, the Warriors in their prime were like this as well. The Celtics are a pleasure to watch. Now, are the players themselves like the exuberant personalities like of a Draymond Green? No, not so much, but I'll agree with you on that. I think in many ways they're underrated, the Celtics team.
Shout out Pierce in the comments asked, but who do they play? Well, they played the Mavericks, who came out the West, and they beat I don't know if I can curse on here. They beat the life out of them.
Yeah.
Just beat the brakes off of them. So I understand the argument, but it's like at a certain point here, that team was not losing to anybody.
I was pulling for the Mavericks. And it was the first time I had Daniel Gafford's a friend. I wanted the Mavericks to win so freaking bad. I really did. It would have been so freaking cool. But they had no match for the Celtics. Really, only Denver's the only team I felt that could have beaten them in a 7-game series. The Wolves, I think, would have gotten waxed. Especially if Porzingis played, they would have stretched the hell out.
Yeah, and Porzingis didn't even play in the damn finals.
Yeah, right.
It was insane. And yes, they were a beat-up Mavericks team. And I got to be real. The East and West difference is just crazy.
But Matthew, I'm sorry for keeping you so long. First time guest, I normally keep them for an hour. I didn't tell you that beforehand.
You didn't tell me. I was like, oh, yeah, it'll be like 20 minutes. Yeah, no, mom, it'll be like 20 minutes. I'll call you back.
Well, I'm sorry, man. You probably had...
Can't talk to my family.
No, well,
can't prep for work tomorrow. I got to go sit at an hour, 2-hour heat at practice.
Oh, yeah, you got practice tomorrow. And
3 straight days standing out there. I have to bring a change of shirts to afterwards. The shirts are gone. And I play tennis outside. I play basketball outside, all this stuff. So I understand how to sweat. No, that's not happening.
No. Well, my apologies. I didn't tell you that. But I didn't think I was going to get into the NBA discussion. That's what kept you. And I don't – there's not as many – people that love LSU women's basketball more than me, and you are definitely that person. You study Jersey Wolfenberger. I think that was the first time
Got the film. Transfer analysis is what I enjoy doing. Like you said, watching tape of all these players, and it's a very surface level thing. But I watched full games of Jersey Wolfenberger, of Kalen Gilbert, Miracle Shepherd, so on and so forth. So
Go give him a follow, Matthew Brune on Twitter, and we'll talk soon, buddy.
Appreciate it, Carter.
How about cheers? I did keep him way too long. That is my fault. I apologize. But the guy knows hoops. I did not expect a 30-minute hoop chat in the middle of football season. It'll be the last time we'll do 30-minute. I understand you guys want to fight him over some of these NBA takes. My hottest NBA take is – I do not feel comfortable saying this. I don't. But Jokic is, to me, clears Durant so easily now. That would be the strong out of anything he said today. That's what I disagree with the most. Jokic clears him easily. Okay. But, and easily is probably a little too strong. But he clears. He's probably closer to Kobe and those guys than you think. Slander me all you want. Slander me all you want. Okay? Now, I shouldn't have been on this long because the doctor told me not to go longer than an hour. I do have another doctor's appointment tomorrow, getting some blood work done, so hopefully everything's good. We should be live tomorrow at 6. It might take tomorrow off, though, because I want to be fully healthy, flying to Vegas, ready for the start of the season. So, In the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. Okay. Dale Brown discovered Shaq at Air Force Base Academy in Germany when he was 13. Dale started recruiting him instantly. I mean, Dale Brown is a special, special, special human, right? Like, I know LSU's got a lot of new wave trendsetters and all that stuff. And the McConaughey-Dale Brown connection is just so interesting. And I might be telling the We Are Marshall story, Ron. I know Cody Worsham and I used to talk about it. But man, dude, Dale Brown was freaking magical, right? Sadiq Charles retiring at 25. I thought that was interesting today as well. He's always been an interesting guy. You know, a very underrated member of the 2019 national championship team. You know, he was suspended, you know, for BS, if you ask me. Okay. So, it's kind of breaking right now. Brandon Ayuk turns down the Patriots, so he's still on the trade bubble. I think that's fascinating because I know for a good fact that he wants to play with Jaden Daniels for the Commanders, and that would be nice. I don't know exactly yet where I'll be staying, but I'll have more on that coming up. So my health situation is very weird. And I'll be honest with you guys. I don't know what's going on. I can't sleep at night though. When I go to sleep, I just itch uncontrollably. And the doctors have given me tons of different reasons as to why. And they said, don't go too hard on the stream. And obviously we went pretty long here. I probably shouldn't have done this, but bills will kind of get paid, you know, but I'll know more tomorrow. I'm getting blood work tomorrow. So prayers on that. I really don't know what's going on. I really don't. Like, I seem fine. My face isn't as red as it was, you know, over the weekend, but I don't know. I really, really don't know. And as you get older, you know, health things pop up and yeah, I don't smoke. I don't drink a lot of alcohol or anything like that, but there's no telling what's going on. I when I sleep, I itch. Like I can't sleep. I've been staying up till 7 in the morning, mostly just sitting here because I can't, you know, sleep. But it is painful. It makes you delirious. Yeah, it's messed with my sleep cycle, which is already crazy. So we'll see. Hopefully we get some good news tomorrow. We'll see what it says. But this is my favorite time of year, man. A lot of us are looking forward to the season. The week leading up to the season is always the funnest. Have I been in the sun a lot? Not really. Actually, I've been outside the most today because when you work from home, I have to go walk the neighborhood once almost every hour because I hate sitting for so long. But I haven't even been doing that. So we'll see what happens. And look, there's a lot of PHL viewers that are going through health stuff right now. So I hope I get a good report tomorrow. I should get a good report tomorrow. I do feel fine. I really do. But, you know, you never know. You never know. So, yeah. And they checked my kidneys. I'll tell them to do that tomorrow. Cut me open and tell me what's going on. So, yeah, I meet with the doctor again tomorrow. We should be live tomorrow at 6 p.m. On Thursday, your friend and my friend, Blake Ruffino, will be back with us. So, look at Pierce telling me my health is an absurd and sensationalized statement. No, I know. You're referencing something else. Yeah, you know, I don't know if I fear anything, though. I don't know if I fear tomorrow or not. But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I kind of wish I just had, like, a heavy cold and I couldn't do the show at all compared to not really know what's going on. So there you go. Oh, I know, Pierce. I know. But, oh yeah, I forgot to do this. I won't go too hard. The Master Blaster was in here. So, that'll be it for me. Now, if you want my practice report from yesterday, a little film breakdown, what a lot of you have gotten to know me from, this is the film breakdown from yesterday. So there it is, right then and there. Go tell Matthew Brune on Twitter that you enjoyed his hour-long appearance, and we'll talk to you soon. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. And tonight, oh, we're doing fajitas. Oh, yeah, shout out to our top and only super chatter, Mr. Jared Addison. As always, I appreciate you, Jared. We're doing fajitas. Let's go. Let's go.